You're listening to WWBC Coco, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Coco, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, Palm Bay, and 100.7 FM.
This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Coco, Florida. We are going to be with you all for 1 hour on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online Miss Ellen everywhere.
All over this glorious planet we're on 1510wwbc.com. You can get all of our shows. Certainly listen live. You can hear us on all of your streaming devices. And then we download all of those shows onto our website and Facebook page, CetaMediaInc.com and Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And once again, we've had so many fantastic, today's no different, so many fantastic.
It's just fun to expand your knowledge base and learn about so many things.
Yes.
And our show is really fun and educational and unscripted,
and today's guest we probably should have started an hour ago.
Yeah,
because we're learning so much.
It's very, very informative too. So for the listeners who are tuning in today, Ellen O'Neill, myself, Ali Tambor, we sit here on Mondays, and I have to give a shout out to my friend Ellen. As busy as she is with her band and with music and singing and making all of us dance, she makes the time to come on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, going on 14 years. Thank you so much.
I love you, girl. We've had so much fun. It's been such a great journey.
It's a blessing to have someone you could count on.
And happy Mother's Day.
Yes. Thank you. I know you had a great weekend.
Happy Mother's Day, Allie.
Thank you to all of our listeners out there that are moms as well. So
yeah, we hope they had a great Mother's Day.
Yes.
And so we sit here on Mondays and we chat about almost everything in the planet. We talk about people who want to spend money, people who want to save money, people who want to learn how to get a mortgage, education, go to community college, go to state college, whatever it is your mind desires. We have the answers on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And so today, of course, my nephew Sanjay is still here with us.
Hi, Sanjay.
I think at this point he's going to be sticking around for a while, but last I heard, he's going to be leaving.
I hear we're going to do Zoom calls soon, right?
Well, you know, we can.
We'll have him zoom in.
We'll have Sanjay zooming in.
That's right.
So yesterday was Mother's Day, and to everyone who mothers, you don't have to give birth to somebody to mother them, right?
That's right.
To everyone that takes care of our planet, takes care of God's magnificent children all over the planet, thank you. I went to Universal. And we had a great time. The family went. We went for Madison's early birthday, and we spent Mother's Day, and it was great. We stayed in a lovely hotel, and we acted like tourists in Florida.
Good. Awesome.
But you know what was so
funny?
You
drove slow.
Yeah, what was so
funny?
Didn't
use your blinkers.
So our guest today, Ellen, you know, I don't know if you know this, but World Bee Day is May 20th.
I just found that out.
That's right. And I was talking with a friend of mine, and she's like, hey, you should have my friend DC on your show, DC Paget, and he can talk about bees. And I said, I never thought about that before. And, you know, we have a mutual friend who, of course, her name is not coming to me now. The girl that we set you up with.
I was drawing a blank, too. I know that she came to our bee school. We have a new beekeeper bee school on the last Saturday of February each year.
Yeah.
And she came to bee school.
Look at that. We both run. It's my age is showing. But anyway, so.
It's your connection to the community is what's showing.
I'll reach out to him. So she sent her his email and everything. We got everything straightened up. So on our second segment, DC is going to be talking with us about being a beekeeper right here in Brevard. We'll talk about how we store the bees. How do you know honey is good or bad? We'll talk about how what the job of the queen is. The teamwork of all the bees. We have so much to talk about with these bees. And, of course, we'll talk about a lot of people think that when they get stung, they think it's a bee, but it's actually a wasp. Mm. So bee gets a bad name for no reason.
They, see?
You know? But our first segment...
Profiling.
Our first segment is with Rose McKay, and she's going to be speaking about her nonprofit. Rose is one of those people that decided to put her money where her mouth is and to do something great for the community. She's an advocate for mental health. She's got her website, theartoflivingnow.org, and she's joining us online right here on the phone from Orlando, Florida. So, Rose, I hope you got all that in. We've been chatting about being a bee and how it is to be as busy as a bee.
Absolutely. Bees are so important to our society, as we know. And they're, you know, we want to do everything we can to protect them. And thank you for the introduction. I'm happy to be here.
Yes,
thank you.
I know you were concerned if we were doing it on Zoom, and then I'm like, no. Like Ellen says, you don't have to dress up for the radio, right?
Exactly. That's the most beautiful thing.
We certainly don't. So, except for Sita, she dresses.
Yeah, I am one of those people that just enjoys dressing up, because when I croak, I hope somebody takes all my clothes and give it to the poor or somebody. Because they'll be like, here, sell this for 10 cents on
the
roadside.
Well, actually, people just don't know how many selfies you take.
That's right.
So you always want to look good.
That's right.
But it's so great to have you with us today.
Yes. So Rose, you are a mental health advocate. You are a chef. You're also a motivational speaker, and you're an author. You do a lot of stuff. And for some reason, you've been in my phone for a very long time to call you to be a guest on Sita and Friends. And here we are. We finally did it. So welcome, and thank you for taking the time to call in. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got started with being an advocate for mental health.
Yes. As you said, I am a chef, and I'm also an author and a real estate agent and a health insurance agent as well, with life insurance. And mental health is very important to me. It's important to our community. And how I got started, being a mental health advocate is just not something you wake up one day and say, this is what I want to be. It comes from lived experience. It comes from helping my loved one and being in a situation, finding myself on the edge of my seat, not knowing where to go, where to get answers, and how to get help. And I found myself, even without really realizing, that every little bit of information that I found myself sharing it with someone else that I saw that was in need. So it was birthed from lived experience.
Right. Well, you know what it is. I think most people, when they decide to start a nonprofit or they decide to become an advocate, it's because someone in their family or themselves has a story to tell. Someone has lived experience, and they're like, I am going to get this done because I feel as though I can help others. So what do you think?
Absolutely.
Thank you. So a lot of people, they don't know when they're unwell. Some people just sit down and say, well, this is how it is, and I'm going to accept it. What do you say to those people who, you know that they're unwell, something is not right, but they're just afraid to reach out for help because they're afraid of being stigmatized?
Exactly. And that fear is very understandable, because fear is the first thing our brain responds to, is fight or flight. And also, when you're dealing with mental illness, shame is so real, and it comes in such a form that it freezes people, it paralyzes people, and it causes them to feel like if they say something, people are going to look at them differently. They're not going to get the help that they need. And they're also afraid of what could happen to them when it comes to, is someone going to lock me away? So helping people to understand that there are facilities, there are organizations and hospitals that can help them. And then you have to weed out the ones that may not be as helpful. But there are organizations out there. There are individuals and people who are ready to serve and give the help that's needed. It's just tapping into those resources and knowing how to connect and not allow shame to keep you in your house on your couch. Because if an individual hurts themselves physically, we're so in tune to our physical body. If you hurt your hand, if you hurt your finger, your toe, you're going to go to the hospital if necessary. or you got to put a bandage on it, because you can actually physically see that, touch that, and feel it. But when it comes to our mind, we sit in isolation, we sit in shame, because we don't want someone to either fear us or think something negative about us.
Well, it always comes down to about communication and education. It really does, right? People just don't communicate. And in some cultures, talking about emotional issues, it's just something that they just don't do. They sweep it under the carpet. Because, you know, because people just don't want to talk about it. But you hit on a very important point, because oftentimes, you know, people talk about giving birth, and people are so happy when you're pregnant and you're going to have a baby and this and that and the next. Well, you know, when those babies are born, they grow up and they have emotional problems. They have mental problems. Some have physical problems. Some have financial problems. And I often wish that our country would focus on all human beings and put resources where we need it. Because it's not only about funding a hospital. It's funding about a mental hospital as well. It's funding for mental health and physical health. And hey, some people need financial assistance too. Because it's like a holistic way of taking care of a human being, right?
Exactly. Because, you know, even if you have a physical ailment, it can also turn into mental illness. Because if you're physically in pain and you cannot move and function as you normally do, it's going to affect you emotionally. It can cause depression, anxiety. It can cause all sorts of mental illnesses across the spectrum. And that's because a head injury can also cause mental illnesses. Our bodies are connected. We're all one, all parts of us. But when it comes to the mind, because you can't see the fact that it's happening, you can't see it with the naked eye, you can't see it. People are so tuned to what they can touch and what they can see, and that's what they respond to. Because when it comes to the mind, if you do an x-ray on my toe, you can see that it's broken. But if you look at a symptom that someone is having, you're responding to the symptom and not the person. And a lot of times people lose sight of the person, and they're seeing what they're doing outwardly, the symptoms of the mental illness. If they see someone talking to themselves when normally they were not talking to themselves, but now because something happened emotionally that shifted their brain, now because it could be a relationship, it could be a loss of a loved one, anything can trigger a mental illness in the mind. It can trigger the mind to try to protect that person. A loss of a loved one, loss of a job, loss of a relationship.
Well, and let's face it, the last 4 years has been unprecedented, you know, with people having to be isolated and away from people that, you know, maybe somebody was on the borderline of having some issues anyway, and then you isolate them on, and then kind of fuel that fire a little bit where they don't have coping skills, and now it's worse because they're not able to be around the people that maybe help them with their coping skills.
They can't
look
people in the eye. A lot of people cannot have a conversation with someone else and look them in the eye because either they weren't taught those skills. Either they weren't taught the skills, or maybe it's in their, I don't know what it is, but of lately people prefer to be online texting instead of looking at someone and speaking with them, you know?
Right, or even having a conversation. And it's funny because I've had really rich discussions with people over text, but then I get to them face to face and I'm like, where's the person that I was texting? Like, this is not the same, because you know they're deleting and, you know, they're making the perfect sentence and so forth. And we're not perfect individuals.
Right.
So none of us are. So those coping skills, we need each other.
Yeah. Do you see that in your advocacy group?
Absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. We have to be more socially responsible. Because social media and texting was the first thing that started to break down our grammar. It started to break down how we communicate. You notice that when you did start texting, you know, you would make your full words, a full sentence, and then it start going to short words, and, you know, a whole word is now three letters. And so we changed the vocabulary, we're shortening how we talk, and that face-to-face, people are more comfortable not being face-to-face. So in some instances, this can help people who are very, very shy and they can't communicate, they don't know how to communicate, but we don't want that to be their crutch. We don't want that to be the way that you live. You still need to be, we need social interaction. We need to be able to touch, feel, communicate, smile. There's so much more when we come together and we build each other up. There's an energy that happens when you come into the room that you're not going to get. Yes, I've been on some great Zoom calls. I've conducted some amazing Zoom calls myself, but it's not the same as when you come together. There's something about us coming together, being able to communicate, to see each other, to give each other a hug or shake each other's hand.
Because we're tribal. Human beings are tribal, you know?
Exactly.
So Rose, what, in your definition, what exactly is mental health?
For me, mental health is really identifying and getting to know yourself, understanding your body, because it has to start with you within your body, recognizing when you're not feeling well, how you're responding to things, and understanding that you have the power within yourself to respond to these things internally and outwardly. Recognize if there's a song that comes on or someone says something, how you respond to that. You could be having a great day and, you know, someone come along and say the wrong thing at the right time, and then all of a sudden your whole body is changing and you're wondering, why am I feeling this way? What happened? So you start thinking and praying and going back and thinking, what just happened? And in that moment you'll realize that person just said something that triggered something on the inside of me, and now I'm not feeling okay. So really just paying attention to your body. Your body will tell you everything that you need to know. And then now that you pinpoint that area, what is happening, now you know at least where, what caused it, where it's happening, and then you can look for solutions. And the first thing is to respond to it as positive as you can. Be as positive as you can, because if you respond to negativity with negativity, it's going to only fuel the fire, and it's going to build up more inside of you.
You're talking about self-love, my friend. You have to know your own self in order to ward off those triggers. But, you know, I find one of the ways to prevent mental health problems for myself is faith. I find that people who have faith and people who actually do believe that there's a higher power, whether you call him Jesus or Krishna or Buddha or Moses or whatever you want to call them, there are times if you have a relationship with God, it makes you feel better. Because, you know, that I remember when I was a child, I went to Christian schools, even though I was Hindu, and people would sing a song that says, I have a friend in Jesus. And I noticed a lot of my Christian friends, Jesus was their friend. And I adopted him as my friend too. And so, but I find absolutely. That when you're sad, you're feeling down, you're feeling gloomy, and you just remember your friends. Yeah. They do help you. Do you find that helps as well with you and the people you come in contact with through your advocacy group?
Well, my advocacy group is founded on the Word of God. And the scripture that I founded my nonprofit on is Romans 5:5. And hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is shedded abroad in our hearts by the Holy Ghost, which is given unto us. And Jesus is certainly my friend, and my faith is the number one thing that has gotten me through the crisis that I found myself in one day with my family, my loved one. My life went from what felt like 0 to 100 overnight, but nothing happens overnight. But when it hits, it feels like it happened overnight. And so I was thrust into a world of mental health and trying to find help. And my number one resource was my cries out to the Lord and my times of just calling on the name of Jesus and God even sending people my way. Because I went from a woman who was negotiating real estate deals and helping people acquire properties and doing all sorts of things to having to just shut all of my day-to-day business down and focus solely on my loved one. And with that, I could only do that through my faith and through prayer. And then the moments where I felt like I couldn't even make a decision, because making decisions about the medications and how the community and the mental health respond to you and your loved one, all of these things, God walked me through to the level of where I went from fear to walking in power. I went from fear to walking in power. Because
I think that deserves an amen. Yeah. I mean, it's the truth when somebody can find that connection, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
So did you find that you got all the support you needed from the community, or was it just through the church?
I needed both. I needed both. And what happened in my life, God took what has happened with me and my loved one to teach others as well. Because one important thing I must say, that if you think, or if anybody think, that whatever someone else is going through is just about them, that's a mistake. Because God is watching how we're responding to one another. Because when your brother or your sister is down and they're out and they were this executive, high-end executive, and now he's talking to himself, and now you're just going to walk past him? No, God is concerned about him, and he's also concerned about how we respond to each other. Because now that person can still sit in the same room with each of us as long as we respond to him with love, to show him or her that you still belong here, you still matter, and you still have a place, and we're here to lift you up. And so that, through my nonprofit organization, how it was built, I was trying to find somewhere that I could still take my loved one and no one would try to snatch us up out of a room. If my loved one had an episode or had a situation, I want them to still be able to thrive and do all the things they want to do and enjoy, and also bring the help to the people, and they're ready to help them on the spot. So I built relationships with CIT officers. I didn't know anything about a CIT officer. I didn't know about the resources in my community. I did a lot of digging and phone calls to find the information that I now know.
So I'll bite. What's a CIP officer?
A CIT officer is a crisis intervention officer. They're trained. All officers, you know, they start out the same, but there are different levels. When CIT officers take that training, they're trained to respond to crisis situations with mental health, come on the scene and de-escalate the situation. Because unfortunately, a lot of situations, and we see it happening in the news, where, police officers come on the scene and it may go in a different direction because they're not trained to recognize. If they're not trained to recognize that this person is having a mental health crisis, they're responding to the flight or fight mode and just ready to protect themselves. But if you have a loved one that's in a crisis, when you call for help, ask for a CIT trained officer.
Yes, because they know how to handle the situation.
That's great advice. Yes, I don't know that I ever knew that.
That's good information.
Yeah. I mean, with the rash of shootings and stuff that we've had, that's something that most states are trying to implement as well, to have a CIP officer so you could talk to the person. Yeah. So Rose, you know what? What do you think causes mental health issues? A lot of people say, well, everything starts with the family, right? Everything in life, the foundation should be a rock solid family. But a lot of people don't have that family. And we see right now in our nation, we are looking at so many people. I mean, we just had the guy on the subway who was in that chokehold and he died, and people are saying, well, he was one of X amount of people in New York City who they knew he was having mental health issues. I mean, what is causing so much mental health issues in our nation?
Well, there's not just one answer, but one thing, there are several things that we can look at. You started out talking about the wholeness of a family. But a lot of us, our families are made up of like a single mom, your grandmother, a lot of women who are rearing the children without husbands or a male figure.
Or foster parents.
Or foster parents. And you still have a lot of success out of that, but then you also have a lot of hurt out of that as well. And then you can have families that have a mother and father, and you still can have hurt in the family and success in the family. So the dynamic of the family could be a component of, you know, many different aspects. It doesn't just have to be, we can't just say because a mother and a father did not raise their children or this is not how the household is set up, that this is what's called a mental illness. We really can't say that because there are other components. The food that we eat, this is something that we must all really, really look at. The foods that we're eating, how foods are processed. Our bodies were not designed to be eating the foods the way that they're processed. And so the more we can get back to nature, and I'm also involved in a community where we're growing our own food on towers. I would love to come back and share that with you. And where you can grow your fruits and vegetables in your own home, on your patio, in your backyard. And the things that we drink is so important. You have so many addictions out there with alcohol and with narcotics and opioids. All of these things have something to do with mental illnesses. So it's a broad spectrum, but we can't say that it's just because a mother and father was not the head of a household, because there's dysfunction with mothers and fathers in a household as well. And just really...
It's multifaceted, what you're saying, and that's so
exactly
true. And there really isn't a cure per se, but I think I think one of the things that works really well, as we get older, we get bolder and wiser, right? And every day that we wake up is a great day. And if you could bottle and sell that to people and say, dude, you woke up today and you're breathing, you're alive. And this is a wonderful world with so many people that need assistance. We've got a gentleman who's going to be speaking after you about what he's doing to with the bees to help pollinate our world here in Brevard in Florida so we can have food. I mean, people find a cause and they go with it. And then you have a lot of people that are retired and they have time and they won't volunteer for anything. But I think if you find your tribe
and
you
purpose.
Can do something and live a purpose for life, it's a way, in my way, it helps me with my mental health, you know, because I find purpose with my life.
Well, it makes you feel good. Yeah, and I get such a rush from, like, when I go out to my garden and pick tomatoes and I make my salad for the night out of my garden. It's like the biggest rush ever. I never thought I would have that.
Or you volunteer like with an environmental group to clean up the beach or the Indian River Lagoon, or you volunteer to go to the Brevard Zoo. I mean, you could volunteer to teach a child to read. You could, when you give back to others, it secretes something in your own body, and you feel good about yourself. You feel good about going giving back. So I'm not sure, you know, what else we can do on Viewpoint with Cedar and Friends.
It's the
but
warm
we all do
and fuzzy
that.
Gene.
Yeah. So what is your website, Rose? It's so nice speaking with you. Give us your website if somebody wanted to donate some time. Maybe they want to donate some money to your website. Maybe they want to send a message. Maybe someone is unwell and they need some advice. Give us the website.
My website.
Oh, we can't hear you. Whatever you just did with your phone.
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now, yep.
Okay, awesome. My website is theartoflivingnow.org. Theartoflivingnow.org.
And I'm going to give you 30 seconds before we end this segment to tell me if someone were to meet you today or tomorrow or some and they say, hey, I'm feeling unwell, I'm questioning my mental health, what advice would you give that person?
My advice, I would tell them to not be ashamed, number one, to ask for help, and you're not alone. There are resources, and in any area you can dial 211. 211 is our local number that you can dial that in many states, many areas, and a lot of people do not realize, but 211 is a resource for mental health. They will transfer you to a mental health dispatcher who can also text you resources, they can email resources for you, and they will even call you back and follow up with your permission to see if the resources help or if they can find more resources for you. So please remember the number 211. You can call them for mental health resources as well. And remember to not be ashamed. You're not alone. And there is help. There are people who want to help you. you do not have to go through this alone. You're not alone. And just look to the Lord as well. And I also want to say before we go, I'm looking to collaborate with other churches. If you want to know more about how you can hold a mental health event, I would love to help you and love to collaborate with you.
Well,
thank you so much for having me.
That is awesome information, Rose. Thank you so much for being here with us on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And this is the right radio station for you to get those collaboration requests in for sure, because lots of folks listen in. We are going to take a brief minute and listen to our sponsors for a station identification, and we'll be right back with Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right after these messages.
Mattress and Furniture is a family-owned furniture dealer featuring the best and most affordable brands. They offer all servicing for free. The delivery, setup, and home, removal of old furniture, and warranty. Work with a reputable and experienced local business as they strive for excellence with their customers. Scotty's been in the mattress and furniture business for 32 years. You can shop online, call, or stop into the showroom to place an order. They are conveniently located inside the Merritt Square Mall and service all of Brevard County in Central Florida. Super savings sale happening now. That's Cloud 9 Mattress and Furniture, 321-459-2473. Visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. Again, 321-459-2473 for Cloud 9.
Welcome to MedFast Urgent Care. We are Brevard County's largest urgent care network. MedFast is now open at 7:30 a.m. every day. That's right, 7:30 a.m. every day. We will get you in and out so you can get back to your day. When you are sick or injured, MedFast is here for you 7 days a week. Think fast, think MedFast. With 18 locations, there's a MedFast near you.
Are you longing for a taste of Louisiana? Lizette's Cajun Bistro is the place to be. They offer Cajun and Creole staples as well as American, vegan, and vegetarian options. The restaurant is located at 2447 North Wickham Road, Unit 146. All menu items are prepared daily from scratch and made to order. Dine in or take out as well as outside seating. Live music on selected weekends. So the next time you have a taste for Louisiana, stop by Lizette's Cajun Bistro, 2447 North Wickham Road.
Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great-tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads. 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. Or visit them on the web at DixieCrossroads.com.
Is a certified public. There's something special about the place we call home. It's the place we live our lives, spend time with family and friends, and make our own. At St. Francis Reflections Hospice, we consider it a privilege to care for you wherever your home may be. We put our hands, hearts, and skills into providing high-quality hospice care in your home. To learn more about how we reflect life, love, and compassion, visit www.reflectionslsc.org.
Dear listeners, this is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in Cocoa, Florida. We are heard worldwide live on AM 1510 WWBC, FM 94.7, 99.9, 100.7, and online everywhere, Miss Ellen.
That's right, www.1510wwbc.com. You can hit that listen live button and get us on any one of your listening devices. Or if you'd like an archive of our shows, those are there by date. Of course, we post everything on our Facebook page, which is Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Also on Sita's personal page. and our website, cedamediainc.com.
Yeah, nobody wants to go on the show's page. Everybody wants to go on my
personal
page. I know,
they want to see what you're up to.
I know, and I give them a lot of stuff.
You do.
You know why? Because I love life. Like I said in the first segment, I think as I get older and bolder and wiser, I'm not afraid to speak to someone and confront someone in a very peaceful manner if something is not working, but just do it from my heart, and it works, you know?
Yeah. I don't think, and I almost wouldn't even say it's confrontational. I think it's just, we just talk better.
Yeah, as you get older,
with all
right?
The people that we've been talking to lately, especially over the last 14 years on the show.
It's like somebody asked my husband, why did you buy a brand new Corvette?
Midlife
coming
crisis.
To like a midlife crisis?
Yeah.
He said, no, I'm getting to the end of life crisis. I'm like, don't say that. But when you think about it, nobody's coming out alive.
No, right. Absolutely not. Drive the car, eat the cake, buy the shoes.
There you go.
Raise the roof. So our second segment is with DC Padgett. And DC is a beekeeper right here in Brevard. And it is amazing what he's doing, not only in his with what he's doing with the bees, but he also has a full-time job. He's a full-time job, but you do this on the side. So we're going to let DC talk to us a little bit about what he does for a living and how he got involved with the keeping of the bees.
Okay, so I'm currently a machinist. I program CNC machines, make machine parts for various aerospace things. I've been doing that for about 12 years. But about 7 years ago, my former pastor got into beekeeping, and something happens to someone who becomes a new beekeeper. They kind of go a little crazy. They talk to everybody constantly about bees. And at that time, I really didn't have an interest in bees. I thought, you know, anybody who keeps a box of bugs that will sting you has got to be a little bit crazy. And beekeepers, we are. But he talked me into it, and I got in a box of bees, and I found them to be totally fascinating. And as I played around with it, I also found out that I had a knack for it. And I can't describe how or why it is, but I can open a beehive, and in a few minutes, I can tell if something is wrong in the beehive. It's just a natural ability. And I really enjoy it. I get stung a lot. People ask me that. And some days I don't enjoy it more than others. But for the most part, I enjoy it.
And I want to thank you for your service, Stu. Born and raised in New Jersey, you also enlisted in the Air Force
right out of
high school.
Actually, I enlisted 6 months before I graduated.
That's a well-rounded young man. I mean, he got out of high school, went in the Air Force, lived in Germany, and then now he's giving back big time in addition to working, you know?
And we formed a club six years back in January. We formed the South Brevard Beekeepers. We meet in Palm Bay. We meet behind the Christian Life Church, which is right off Emerson Drive. Our monthly meetings are the second Tuesday of the month. And every Sunday, we have beehives behind the church, and they're available to the community. If you want to come out and get in a beehive, from 2:30 to about 4 o'clock, as long as it's not raining, we'll open a couple beehives, and you can come out. We have some particulars. You must wear protection. We have some limited amount of protection. And if you know you have a bee allergy, you have to bring an EpiPen with you. And there's a hold harmless agreement we require people to agree to, because the bees are unpredictable. You can get stung. Even in a bee suit, you can get stung. Yeah. But it is a lot of fun.
And so were you looking for a place to have the apiary and the church has sponsored it? Or how did that come about?
We were the former pastor got me started, and he was the pastor of that church. And so together we decided, there was three of us that formed the club, and we wanted to focus on three primary things. We wanted to educate the public about what bees do and how important they are. We also wanted to be able to educate people with a hands-on experience in a beehive. And so we wanted to have a place where we could put bees. And the back corner of the club property was ideal for that. We can put it back there. And so we wanted to open it to the public. So we have a club. We don't have an annual dues. We do a couple fundraising things. We host an annual beekeeping school on the last Saturday of February. It's an all-day event. People come out. They build a box. They build 5 frames. They take it home. It's their box to keep. They can have bees in that box eventually.
And tell us what a frame is.
It's in order to have bees in the U.S., you have to have a beehive that you can inspect. So a frame, it's a wood frame. It's 19 inches long approximately and about 7 inches deep. And beehives will have anywhere from 5 to 12 frames in them. And that's what the bees draw the comb on. And this makes it easy if I want to look in a beehive to see if the queen's laying eggs or to see if there's some kind of disease in the hive. I take each frame out and I can look at it individually and I can tell the health of the beehive. And that's required in every state. You have to be able to take the beehive apart and inspect it.
Yeah. Does all the bees make honey or just certain ones?
Well, Apis mellifera is a honeybee, and that makes honey. Other bees will make something similar, but my focus is typically on just Apis mellifera, the honeybee. And there's other subspecies of that. Different bees from various nationalities will have different temperaments. Most people prefer Italian honeybees. They're traditionally a more gentle bee, more friendly to work with. They build up very fast in the springtime. They don't typically produce a lot of honey, but for most amateur, you know, hobbyist beekeepers, it's relative, because even with a beehive that doesn't make a lot of honey, you can still can pull anywhere from 1 to 6 gallons in a season, depends upon the weather.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So why?
See, it's just like Italian people. Yeah. They're nice. They're hard workers.
Yes.
You know?
So should Floridians care about the bees? Because, you know, somebody might say, well, why do you care so much about the bees? Well, there are a lot of reasons why we should care about the honeybee. And let's hear a few of them.
Well, 30% of everything you eat is from pollinators. And bees are one of your primary pollinators. So if you go to the grocery store and you purchase stuff, just imagine one-third of everything just disappearing because they're not there to pollinate the stuff. And so it's important to have.
Yeah. And the flowers. How many flowers does it take to make the honey?
An individual bee will only live about 7 weeks, and she will visit up to 1 million flowers, and she'll make less than 1/2 teaspoon of honey.
Yeah.
So this, I've got 12 ounces of honey in this little bottle here. And so you imagine how many bees gave their lives to make that amount of honey.
How many honeybees carry the pollen?
Well, it's various jobs. The bees, and it's genetics, a lot comes from the drone father. So some bees will do better gathering pollen, some bees do better gathering honey. And you've got a pretty good mix in most beehives. And it also depends upon what drones the queen mated with. If she mated with a lot of drones that their genetics are focused on gathering pollen, you're going to have a hive that's got lots and lots of pollen in it. Yeah.
Somewhere I heard that for bees, the pollen is a protein source they need to raise their young.
Yes. The adult bees don't typically eat a whole lot of the pollen, but in order to raise brood, they have to have pollen.
And Allie, you did a paper on this in high school.
Yeah, my grandfather raised bees.
Were you as fascinated then as you are now as we speak with DJ?
Oh, yes. I'm 100% a honey person. I love to use it instead of sugar, naturally. And it's fascinating to see, because the beehive is a social experiment in everybody's got a particular job. Some of them, their job is to air condition the hive. Some of them, their job is to go find where the pollen is and come back and tell the rest of the bees. Some of them are part of the queen's court, and they make sure the queen stays clean, feed her, and make sure she's, you know, doing what she should be doing. And
she's doing her job.
Yes.
And DC, so tell us a little bit more about the queen and how many she reproduces a lot.
Yeah, most of your textbooks will say the queen can lay up to 2,000 eggs a day. I'm yet to see a queen that prolific. typically, most of us, we look at probably 12 to 1,400 as a really good queen. And she has two jobs in the beehive. Her primary job is to lay lots of eggs. And her secondary job is to emit the queen pheromone. And that queen pheromone actually keeps the hive calm. It produces a certain area of the bee. If you take a queen out, within about 15 minutes you can tell, because the bees will start to panic. When that pheromone is gone, the bees will go into panic, and they make what I call a bee roar. I actually make queens. In order to make queens, what I'll do is I'll take a whole bunch of bees and I'll put them in a box with no queen, and I wait about 3 or 4 hours, and then I'll introduce some very young larva that has just hatched, and they'll feed that larva a diet of exclusively royal jelly for about 3 days. And by feeding it just royal jelly, whatever I give them will turn into queens. But when I set that box up and come back 3 or 4 hours later, I can be 10 feet from that box and I can hear the bees, because they're in a panic mode. They know there's no queen and there's no hope. But I can put that bar in there with larvae and come back an hour later and it's totally calm, because they know they have hope.
You created one.
Yeah, I gave them something, yeah.
You're the father of the bees. So sometime I notice with honey, like there's a little whitish thing in the bottle? What causes the honey to go white?
I'm not sure about the white. We do get crystallization.
Yes.
A honey with a high dextrose content is more apt to crystallize than anything else. And if there's something solid in it, like I don't microfilter my honey. It goes through a pretty coarse screen. So I tell people, if you see a little black speck in there, it's probably part of a bee. So there may be some pieces.
You'll never know.
Put it on some bread.
Yeah.
Put it in some tea.
There's probably some pollen, but because there are those little particulates in it, and most of my stuff is brilliant pepper, and it does have a tendency to crystallize. So since there's already something in there, and the dextrose content's high, if it's in a relatively cool environment, it'll start to crystallize. There's nothing wrong with it. If you want to decrystallize it, warm it up. And the best way to warm honey up, don't put it in the microwave. Just stick it on the dashboard of your car in the sunlight for an hour or two, and that will decrystallize the honey, and you're good to go.
Does the honey ever go bad or spoil?
Honey never goes bad.
There's no expiration date.
Nope, no expiration date.
They found honey in
tombs
in Egypt.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's still potable.
Yep.
Yeah, because you know when
I don't think I want to eat it, but
no. Yeah. But
that'll be too old. But you know, like when we do our Hindu prayers, one of the required items that you have to have at the service is honey. I guess culturally, like you say, in Egypt, they put it in the tomb, right?
Yes.
So, and what about, like, a lot of people have questions. Some people put the honey in the fridge, and some people put it on the shelf. Where should it be stored?
Either way is good. If you put it in your refrigerator and it has a proclivity to crystallize, it's going to crystallize faster in the colder temperatures. Although the colder temperatures will keep it better. It won't go dark as fast. Honey will eventually darken as it ages. There's nothing wrong with it. It's just a natural occurrence. So if it's refrigerated, it'll slow that process down, but it can accelerate the crystallization process.
Yeah. And you said that the way the church is, the public can come as long as they dress properly, you bring their EpiPen and all that. But do you see there's an interest for school children or community groups? Are people coming by and learning more about the bees?
Yes, we have a member of our club, her name is Bonnie, and she goes around to various schools. She has a package of stuff that she's put together. She has a box of frames with pictures on them she can show. I've done about five or six groups behind the church on a Friday afternoon. If you contact me, I set up a screen tent, and I'll bring a beehive close to the screen tent so the students can get inside the tent. We'll open the hive on the outside, and then they can see through it. And I'll usually, if I do a talk, I've got what's called an observation hive. It's a plexiglass box where I can put one frame of bees in the box and close it up. And I can take it into a classroom, and the kids can see the bees running around in there.
And here's the biggest question that somebody asked me to ask, is the three main parts of the bee. There's three main parts to the honeybee?
Well, you've got the body, the head, thorax, I guess. The parts, I know that
that if you get stung by a honeybee, the bee dies.
Yes, you know there's a stinger. Yes. And there's a reason for that, which is really kind of interesting also. The queen bee does not have a barb on her stinger. Her stinger is just a straight line like a needle. But your worker bees, the stinger actually consists of three pieces. There's a solid piece, which is called a stiel, S-T-I-L. And there's two other pieces next to that, which are barbed. And they're attached to the muscle sac, which has the venom. And as those muscles contract, those two barbs actually oscillate back and forth. And they will drive the stinger deeper into your skin. So you want to get it out as quickly as you can, because the longer it's sitting in your skin, the deeper it's going to go. Now, people say not to grab it and pinch it and pull it out. You want to scrape something across it. But if you're going to take 30 seconds to get your credit card out and scrape it, just pull it out with your finger. Just get it out as fast.
Yeah, yeah. And in your travels, I mean, you've been speaking to people. You guys have the hive in the back of the church. I know our friend Lena Dunn was very taken in with you. She's the one. Thank you, Lena, for suggesting that I have D.C. Patrick come on our show. Do you feel like there's any threats to the honeybees here in Florida?
Well, they're really not just here in Florida. We have some big pests, and this is caused by international commerce. The biggest pest we have around here is called a small hive beetle. It actually came in from South Africa. They're attracted to the smell of honey. They get into a beehive. They'll lay eggs in the honey, and they can overcome a beehive pretty quick. And so the beekeeper's got to be conscious of it in there. Keeping small hive beetles out is a chore. There are various companies make different kind of traps. You can't put poison in a beehive because you'd poison your bees. So you have to be careful what you put in the beehive or around it. you have to monitor that. Another big pest is a varroa mite. It's brought over from Asia. This is a mite which will attach itself to the body of the bee, and it carries a multitude of diseases. And varroa mites can destroy a colony in just a few weeks if they take it over. And so we watch out for that. And wax moths are a pest, not quite as bad, but the two biggest pests are the hive beetles and the varroa mite.
Yeah. You know, when you hear people talk about environmental protection, you don't think about things like this. But they have to watch these things when people are coming in from other countries as well. This is why they ask you in the airport, are you carrying any live animals and things like that? Because look what could happen with our crops here in Florida.
Right.
And you were saying, DC, that we're very fortunate in Florida because we can have the bees year-round to pollinate our crops.
Yeah, we have no real winter. And because I make queens, I know people around the country that make queens. And I have a friend of mine, she lives in Michigan. She's a queen producer. And every year around Christmas time, this past year wasn't good, but the last 5 years, I've actually made queens during Christmas week. And I'll take a picture of me taking queens out of a beehive and send it to her up in Michigan. She can't make queens until, right about now is when she's starting to produce queens.
Do you find, like, the children are excited when you talk about the bees? Because, like, just having DC on our show and giving us a refresher about bees and the shape of the hive and everything, it's so interesting. Do you have kids that actually put their hand up and say, look, I eat strawberries all the time, I eat mulberries, I eat, you know, fruits and vegetables, but I had no idea how important the bee was. Do you ever have people that say that?
I get some kids that show interest. Mostly kids like looking at the bees. They're not really interested in the technical aspects. But an interesting thing happened this past fall. We have a young lady, she's a high school freshman, I believe. Her mother's an MD. And she contacted me. She wanted to conduct experiments collecting bee venom for treatments of different kinds of diseases and bacteria. And I'm like, that's fine. That's great. So we got together, set some ground rules. You have to be aware of the safety precautions because you're collecting concentrated bee venom. And so if you give an open cut, and you hit this, it's like being stung by 100 bees at one time. But her and her mom came out to the yard. We set up a little collection device, and she collected bee venom, and she took first place in her science project.
Wow.
And she plans to continue to do this. So, yeah, love to get kids involved. It's amazing. The people that I run across that seem to be most interested in doing this are typically over 40.
Yeah, well, because I think we figure it out, right? And we start realizing a little bit more about our footprint.
Yeah,
what's important. And what we're doing, what we're leaving, what's important.
And I think if you educate the parents, it's not only about the kids, too. If you educate the parents, then maybe when they go to IHOP and they want to take pancake syrup or they want to take honey to put on a piece of bread, maybe they won't take and waste. Because how many times you go to a restaurant and they're cleaning up the table and you see an unopened little honey, or you see a little orange marmalade, or you
and
see
great. And to DC and right now, that's four bees lost their life for that.
Well, not only
thing.
That. I mean, I'm from Trinidad, right? And when we were children, we didn't have the luxury of having little packaged strawberry and marmalade and things like jams and stuff. My parents taught us if you're going to take honey, you take just enough for what you need. But I think a lot of people waste honey. How do we get people not to waste honey?
Oh, Lord.
That's a good one. How do you get people to stop wasting anything? We are a very wasteful society.
I mean, when you think about how many people go hungry in the United States daily or yearly or die from starvation, you know, you think like, well, wait a minute. Maybe people ought to start teaching them how hard these bees work to give us some honey, right? So how many bees live? How much time do we have? We better check our time because this conversation is so enlightening. I feel like I'm learning. Yeah. Great. 3 minutes.
But tell us
about the shape of the hive and how the honey is collected.
Okay. Well, the shape of the comb is really kind of interesting. It's not by design. It's just the way the bees, they'll form wax. They'll grab onto each other, and it's called festooning. And they kind of make a scaffold of bees, and they secrete wax from a gland on their abdomen. And they'll grab that wax, and they'll mold it with their mandibles and pass it off to different bees. And just because of the way they're hanging, it forms that hexagon shape, which, as speaking earlier, if you take the three shapes you can take and put together without losing space, it's a square, a triangle, and a hexagon. But as far as surface area goes, the hexagon will have the best surface area with the smallest perimeter of those three shapes. So the bees are very efficient in the use of the wax. As far as honey collection goes, bees will go out and collect nectar. And what's interesting is the nectar can have a very high moisture content. In order to make honey, they've got to get that moisture content down to about 18%. And 17% is even better, because in some things at 18% will start to ferment. So they'll collect the nectar, they'll bring it back to the hive, and they'll pass it to another bee, and she'll take it and she'll put it in a cell. And then it may sit in that cell for a couple of days, and some other bee will take that nectar from that cell and move it to another cell. They're constantly moving the nectar around, and so it mixes with enzymes of various bees. And at the same time, you've got bees in the beehive moving their wings, and they're fanning air around to try to dry that out. And somehow they know when that moisture content down is at 18% or so, and they'll cover the top of that cell with wax. That's now capped honey. So as a beekeeper, that's what we're looking for. When I pull a frame out, and typically in October is when I harvest my honey, I pull a frame out. I'm looking for, you know, all these combs with nice capped honey. I know it's going to be close to 18%. And I'm going to harvest honey.
Wow. And how many bees live in that hive?
A full-size colony is going to hit about 70,000 bees to max out.
So tell us about the local. You've got honey here sitting here on the. This is Brazilian pepper.
Yeah, that's my primary harvest. I know it's mainly pepper because I pull it in October. Brazilian mm-hmm. pepper typically blooms early September, and then it takes about 4 or 5 weeks for them to process it down. So typically about the 15th of October I process.
And of course, we're not making any claims or anything, but I'm a big proponent of making sure that you eat local and eat, you know, especially if you're going to do honey. It helps with helps with allergies. It helps with
immunity. It helped Danny because he's shaking his head.
Yeah, it helps with immunity and so forth. So
before
make sure you check
air,
out.
Let's find out if somebody wanted to be part of your group, your club, or they wanted to get involved in the honeybee business and save some bees, how do they get a hold of you?
We have a Facebook group, South Brevard Beekeepers, on Facebook. If you go there.
Say it again.
South Brevard Beekeepers.
South Brevard.
We're on Facebook. If you go to the Facebook page and ask you about 4 questions, answer the questions. And one of the administrators will approve you into the group. Again, we meet at the church. The address is 343 Nail Street in Northeast Palm Bay. From 2:30 to about 4 o'clock on Sunday afternoon, you're welcome to come out. You can email us, southbrevardbeekeepers@gmail.com, with our email address.
And apparently they have a success rate with science projects.
Right.
Yes, to helping with science projects.
Yeah,
so
and if we wanted to help by purchasing some honey, where can we find you all to buy?
If you get on the group Facebook page, there are several members that sell honey. If you got on the Facebook page and said, I want to buy some local honey, we're South Brevard, but we have beekeepers. We've got members of the club down in Miami. I've got members in a club up in Gainesville.
That's awesome. And we will make sure we get all of that on our Facebook page and on our websites. Sorry to cut you short. We get all excited about bees today here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. Thank you so much, Rose, for calling in on our first segment. And we will see you next week right here at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends on 1510 WWBC.
Man.